Welcome, everyone, to what I think I'm calling my podcast, Herbs Make the Difference. That might change, and so down the road, if you're listening to a completely differently named podcast, it's because it wasn't named Herbs Make the Difference. That remains to be seen. My name's Karen England, and I am the owner at Edge Hill Herb Farm in Vista, California, and my inaugural guest on my podcast is Cindy Crist of Following Seasons Botanicals. And we've been friends for a really long time. I think I met her at a presentation I gave to a group in the East County, but I don't even know about that. Do you know when we met?
I think that, well, I know for sure back in the day when the Botanical Gardens was still called Quails and the Herb Club started doing the harvest festivals there, and you always presented. I always had a vending booth.
That's right.
And it's possible, though, that you were down for the San Diego Herb Club's different presentations where we may have met even before that.
I feel like it was in someone's home in the East County, that a meeting where that I was invited to. In fact, I have a horrible memory for some things, but I think I was late because my car keys were in my robe in the bathroom, and I was panicking because I didn't have other keys. And so I called, and the lady said, oh, we'll just have lunch, and you will find your keys, I'm sure, if you just relax. She said, go have a cup of tea, and we'll eat lunch, and then, you know,
yes,
see what you could do.
I do remember, because I remember that lunch on her deck.
Yes.
Up at Crest, I think. And
yes,
she was at the time the president of the San Diego Herb Club.
Okay, so I was the speaker, and I was mortified that my car was loaded and everything was ready to go, and I just couldn't leave. And I took her advice. She told me to calm down, and so I did. And I went back and retraced my steps like for the millionth time. But this was the first time I retraced them to what I was wearing before I took a shower. And I found it, and I called her right back. And I said, I'm on my way. Thanks so much. And I believe that we met there.
Yeah, yeah. Were you living here at the time?
Yes.
Because that's quite a long drive from here to Crest.
Yes, and if you're already late. I mean, of course I was panicking. So, yes, it is a long drive.
That's why you showed up in your robe.
No. That's right. Yeah. I had a wonderful day that day, partly because everyone was just so gracious. And I figured it had already gone badly, so I enjoyed my talk. You know, I wasn't nervous because I'd already messed up. So it was fun. I made a lot of friends that day. And look at us here now.
I know. And that was a long, long time ago.
It was a long time
ago. That's why we're having difficulty remembering the details. That's how long ago it was.
It is. Cindy's got a lot of skill sets that I admire, and she's a fellow soap maker. I stopped making soap for many years, and I'm restarting it. And I joined the Handcrafted Soap Makers Guild again after so many years to get myself back up to speed. And it turns out that the president of the local chapter happens to be sitting here on this podcast with us. And wow, what a treat to be able to have that connection as I go forward with my soap making. But she's been making soaps this whole time.
Yeah.
And she took it to the next level, and I'm following her lead. She has essential oil stills that she imports and then sells now, but she makes her own hydrosols for her products. And I was so jealous of the beautiful pictures of her copper stills that I got myself one. And she's teaching me how to use it so that I can have my own hydrosols in my products. When did you get your first still?
Oh, gosh, it's been about 6 or 7 years, I think, since I got my first copper still. But for not too long before that, I had kind of makeshifted my own stainless still and glass still so that I could start practicing. And I actually did that pretty successfully for about a year before I fell in love with the copper and found resources.
I bought a 5 liter?
5 liter alembic. Rotating column.
I know that's all technical, people, but when you start to look at stills, and I hope you'll look at her website, and when this does air and gets posted, her website link will be in the description, and there's information on sourcing and the stills from her that we're talking about. But she sells bigger than what I have, but to get started at the 5 liter is, I think, good for a beginner. But you now have a bigger one yourself?
Yeah, I've got some 10 and 20 liters, but the 5 liter is really an excellent size for your home use.
Yeah.
And small production for formulating with. Yeah.
Sure. A great way to learn and get your feet wet in the whole process of growing herbs and then distilling them in different ways. I'm going to ask her some questions now that just are going to launch our conversation. And the first one is, what herb started you on your herbal journey in your life and career? And about what, when in your life was it?
Well, it's a long story. I'm going to try to keep it it's okay. On the edited side. But first off, I think I would have to say raspberry leaf.
Wow.
As my first herb. And the reason being, I was about 14 years old. And at that point in time, I got very involved and curious about midwifery. And so my aunt was a midwife, and I began going to a few births with her. And one of the main questions of asking my future to be husband was, are you willing to have kids at home? Because that's where I'm going to birth mine. And he said yes, and the happy story ever after. But going back to raspberry, it's all for the, female reproductive system.
Sure.
So that played off of the midwifery and all of those sorts of things. So yeah, raspberry leaf.
And you were 14.
Yeah, so I started drinking infusions of raspberry leaf and learned how to simple. Basically just starting with one herb and drinking nothing but, besides other foods in your diet, drinking only raspberry leaf for a good month and really feeling the energies of it. And then I would move on to other simples that were nutritious and full of minerals like nettles, oat straw.
Sure. Since you were so young, when did you start studying for it as a career then?
Yeah, well, I was always interested as a child, grew up out in nature, and just about that same age, 14, I started to follow all of the big headliner herbalists, if you will, of the early, when the fresh new renewal of becoming an herbalist, people like Rosemary Gladstar.
Sure, Susan Weed.
Susan Weed. But they were all just about 6 to 8 years older than I was. So at 14, I couldn't just take off and go to the farm of Ina May Gaskin or go start, following the herbal scene with this particular group of people. But I was, and they were just at that cuff of that age. They were off and out, and I followed them, bought their books, and been studying with them ever since. So I started quite young. I would say the very first official formal education, I started with Rosemary Gladstar.
Wonderful place to start, I have to say.
Yeah.
That, wow. My experience is so different from that. I grew up working for my cousin's plant nursery in Encinitas. I was there the day it opened 50 years ago. I was 12, but I didn't have any interest in working in a family business. Didn't matter what it was. And I certainly wasn't interested in plants. My grandmother made me. The family was having this business, and I was, an able-bodied kid, could do things that the others weren't needed for. But so I worked there for many years until I was 30, so from 12 to 30, before I was ever interested in the product. That was their thing. It wasn't mine. Yeah. I would sell the plants. I learned the product because of being around it. But I met and married in 1989 my husband, and all of a sudden we have a house with no yard and a kitchen, and it's, you know, I've got all these wedding presents or kitchen gadgets and everything, and I was learning to cook, and I had an epiphany one day in the grocery store where I was about to buy a little McCormick Schilling rosemary bottle off of the, you know, the spice shelf for my mother's spaghetti sauce recipe, which is what she was teaching me because I was learning to cook. And as I'm grabbing this thing off the shelf, I realized that all day long I was, for less money, selling the plant to people at work. And this light bulb went off, and I put the thing back on the shelf. I'm 30 years old, and I was like, I could grow this for, you know, spend 99 cents, and I'll have unlimited rosemary. So anyway, I put it all back. I think I got a frozen pizza for dinner that night. It wasn't going to be spaghetti. And the next day, I bought a bunch of herbs. And then I went home, and I planted them in the backyard all badly. And when I mean badly, I am no joke. There was a patio cover, and then this beautiful blank area in the back of the yard, full sun, perfect for herbs. And I planted them all together in a corner, kind of in the shade, under the awning. I had an entire yard. I could have given them space. Anyway, the lesson that taught me, and it set me on my life path, was that herbs are hard to kill, because I didn't kill them. And even though I planted it badly, they all grew towards the sun. So they were those strangest looking herbs ever. They were all bent sideways going out to the sun. But they tasted good. It didn't matter how they looked or how I did. They were wonderful. The fragrance was still there. I mean, it would have been better if they'd had sun, frankly, but I didn't care. And I was like, oh, wow, if I could learn to do this right, imagine how good I'll be at this. It changed my life. All of a sudden, I was interested in gardening, and I started traveling to gardens and learning. I went to libraries, and anyway, it changed my life.
You didn't even know all along you were already at the perfect job, surrounded by your future.
I wasted so much time.
Well, I think we probably all did at some point.
The next question I want to ask you is about the person who influenced your love of the useful plants, which is, for those of you that are tuning in and may not know what we mean by that, the definition of an herb that we use. I'm not an herbalist, but I believe Cindy is. It's that herbs are useful plants, useful for cooking, crafting, decoration, and medicine. And encompasses a lot of plants. But so when I say who influenced your love of the useful plants, who would that be in your life?
Well, I would say all the way back to my father and my grandmother, both who had beautiful gardens, all kinds of different edibles, fruit trees, olive trees. My dad was always gardening. My grandma would come to the house and garden with us. I would go to my grandma's house and garden with her, pick the fresh strawberries right off. Grandma always had herbs growing.
Wow.
So I would say I just learned that plants were useful at a very young age. Something, you know, today's kids, like going back to your bottle of rosemary, they don't realize what's in that bottle is coming right out of the ground as a plant.
That is so true. I'm going to have to say for me that it's my cousin at Sunshine Gardens that I didn't want to work for, that I learned the most from, but it was accidental up until I turned 30. You know, I just learned what I needed to know to be able to do the job and go home and, you know, read novels, which is what I wanted to do. You know, didn't want to be there. But once I started wanting to know about the plants. He just answered all my questions. He thought they were weird, frankly. You know, nobody else was asking him those questions or anything. But he was patient with me and all, and he influenced me the most. And I wanted to be more like him. He had a love of plants and a knowledge that was vast, and I hadn't respected it for what it was up until I started to want to. It. His father, my uncle, was a seedsman and a horticulturist by trade, and he would go to the greenhouse to plant seeds for solace after fishing in the surf in the morning. He would go in the greenhouse in the afternoon and then go back surf fishing in the evening. And I was like, oh, there are other ways to live your life that, you know, get you in touch with nature and everything. And I just, it influenced me greatly.
Yeah, the whole nature aspect, definitely. I was really, really a lucky child to be growing up in Southern California.
Yes.
60 years ago.
Yes.
And not only that, but when we weren't at home during the week, you know, the, quote, work week, every weekend we would go down to the Colorado River and we would hike and ride bikes and water ski. And so out in nature, you know, and just, I think that's probably where my wild harvesting, my foraging interest comes from, is just that takes you out of nature. And it's just amazing how many plants are out past the garden, you know, in the canyons, in the fields, just everywhere.
Oh, your face lights up. Everybody that's listening to this, I wish you could see her face the minute she just starts talking about that. It's just she's beaming. So, what is the difference between an essential oil and a hydrosol?
Okay.
Getting to some of the specifics.
Yeah. Well, the essential oil is a fatty loving substance. And the way to obtain that from the plant is through distillation. So, distilling the plant yields that fatty loving component of the plant called essential oil. And along with it, what used to be called a byproduct of the distillation process is now called the hydrosol. And that is actually the water-loving, soluble, steam-distilled product coming from the same run or the same distillation time.
Sure.
It'll yield an essential oil. And since it's oil, it's floating on top of the hydrosol. But moving forward just a little bit, over the last 8 plus 10 years, this whole new renowned interest in hydrosols has taken over the scene, and people are actually distilling specifically for the hydrosol. So now it is an honorable product all on its own.
It's not the accidental byproduct that, well, let's find something to do with
it. Yeah, what could we use this
and
for?
And isn't that what I'm really getting in my still, because it's a small enough level?
Yeah, with a little 5-liter and even 10-liter. I mean, you know, distilling for essential oils, you need to be on a bigger scale.
Sure.
We do get some essential oils from our 5-liter, but it's such a minute amount, you might leave it within the hydrosol.
Yeah.
If you get more and you want to use a separatory funnel and you want to really get a clean separation between the oil and the water, you know, you might be able to get up to 1/2 ounce, which would be about 15 milliliters of oil. And of course, if you do that over and over with the same plant, you'll get some oils, and it's absolutely beautiful and very usable. But the hydrosol, we're learning, is a much more efficient and even sustainable way to use that plant extraction, because you get 3 quarts of hydrosol out of a little 5-liter still. And that's a lot of fluid ounce to, you know, formulate with, whether it's for medicine, cosmetic products on your skin, and even food-related.
I used for many years when the Lavender Fields of Valley Center was going with my friends who started that, they had some rose geranium growing on their property, and they put it in their still when they when the lavender harvest was done and they would do the center geranium. One of the things that I know from their experience is that center geranium gives up a lot of material, yeah. Both hydrosol and essential oil in comparison to lavender, let's say.
Yeah, are the two against roses.
Yes, yes, yeah. But so she had she had copious amounts of rose geranium hydrosol, which is not a bad thing. But I started experimenting with it in cookies, ice creams, cakes, and everything. And oh my gosh.
I remember those days when you were doing
it. Yeah. So, yeah. Oh, the gosh. Those are my, I mean, that was a magical time in my life. I learned so much, and I was given such an opportunity to play with ingredients and learn by doing. It was fascinating. But that really got me on the hydrosol track because it was a beautiful product, just something that you would want to just make that. And not,
And you can. You can get – you can distill the most beautiful hydrosols from such easy herbs. Thyme, oregano, all those cooking herbs, they too make gorgeous hydrosols. And those herbs are so easy to grow.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So, you know, you don't have to be a real farmer to get this going on.
No, if I can do
just a nice garden.
When I was 30 in the shade by a patio, anybody could do
that. That's right.
How can you know if essential oils are pure and safe for use? So if you're shopping, not making your own, what are the hallmarks of a quality product?
I think one of the first things to speak to is who are you purchasing from, or what company are you purchasing from, and how are they obtaining their oils? Some companies might say they're running their own stills. Most I would say are not.
Mm-hmm.
So having trust in your supplier is number one. But if you're looking at oil, let's say you ordered some online and they arrive, and really one of the next things to compare oils with is maybe having a couple of the same oil from a couple different companies. And then start trading your nose. What does real mm-hmm. lavender smell like?
Mm-hmm.
And the more you start training your nose, the more you'll start sniffing out synthetics,
mm-hmm.
things that they're cutting the oil with, etc.
Mm-hmm.
You'll just really start to train your olfactory about what you're smelling. Thirdly would be to know what to expect within the label of the bottle, that is telling you what is inside the bottle. So you want to have accurate botanical information. What plant with their Latin name did they actually distill?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. But so many people ask me this question, and I give them a couple of things, but I don't want to denigrate companies or anything
right.
like that. But I say, if you are in a store, and I'm going to pick on a company right now just because I know they have essential oils there, and Target. So you're in a store, Target, and there's essential oils on the shelf, I would bypass them personally because they're all the same price.
There you go.
And,
excellent point.
And when essential oils are gotten by reputable companies, they get differing amounts. The harvest was of differing amounts of the plant material, and that all affects cost. So essential oil should not, thyme should not cost as much as rose, but should not cost as much as something that's harder to get. And rose geranium, they should give you, because it just spits it out at you kind of thing. I mean, it should be the least expensive. Lemon should be inexpensive, but some of the more rarer citrus fruits should be more. So when a line just has, you know, $3.99 across the board for all of them, that's a real red flag.
And you know, when I say know your supplier, I mean know your aromatherapist or know your aromatherapy company. I would instantly do the old nicks on anything coming out of a department store.
Sure. Or Home Goods. Or Big Lots.
Definitely.
A second seller of retail and I've seen essential oils in all of them. Also, understanding the terms, because fragrance oil is not essential oil. And there is can be no plant in a fragrance oil at all. It's only chemicals. Or it can be essential oil that's been cut with fragrances.
Yes. And that's what I mean, starting to train your nose.
Yes.
After a little bit of experience, you can really tell a synthetic when you smell one.
Oh, yeah. Well, and then if you have sourced yourself small amounts of high-quality essential oils, I think that fragrance oils will give you a headache. And that there's you will notice that unnatural difference in your body will react to it. At least mine does. And unless you're allergic to the plant originally that the hydrosol came from, you shouldn't be getting a headache from that fragrance.
Right. I mean, yes, because we can't discount that an individual might have some sensitivities to a particular plant.
Right.
Those allergies exist.
Yes.
But when people come to me and they say, oh, I just can't use oils, they all make me sick, I can identify immediately that they really haven't experienced a true essential
oil.
That's right. They're experienced a synthetic oil, which is a lab-made perfume, if you will. Now, if somebody is in the elevator and long after they get out and you enter and you're still smelling their lingering aroma, it is a synthetic.
Yes.
It is not a pure essential oil. You know, that's kind of an example and just that tinge up into the olfactory. You could just pick out that chemical and go, oh.
If you have vision problems, at least for me, if you have vision problems and you encounter a fragrance oil that's pretty strong, it actually affects my vision. But once you start to understand what's happening with your body, it's a great clue to getting the the real deal. Yeah.
You know, and anybody that's been in touch with nature at some point in their life, you know, and you just go out and you smell the plants. That's another way. You know, take a real plant and smell it.
Yep.
And then take that geranium you thought you bought at Walmart that was so great and smell it. And there's a good starting point.
Yeah,
right,
and
there.
We are not denigrating the company selling the product at their shelf. I mean, that's not what the purpose of this is. But if you're investing in something that you're wanting to affect your mood, which people want to have it, you know, lift their mood, relax their muscles, do, you know, all of those kinds of things, it needs to be the real plant. It needs to be the real deal.
Right. Many people enjoy lighting a candle, and they love that aroma that's coming off. But what we're really talking about here is clinical aromatherapy, and that's not to say you need to be a doctor, but that is to say that clinical aromatherapy means it's going to affect you, hopefully in a positive way. That's
correct.
The goal. You know, body, mind, your physical aspect, your mental aspect.
Yes.
So in a healing way, where a synthetic's not going to offer any healing.
But it's just going to make your room smell nice. Another just side note is there are some fragrances that aren't essential oils. So I believe lilac is one.
Correct.
And so if you're buying a bottle of lilac fragrance that is only chemically made, because there is no essential oil from lilac. And there's a few others. So if that's a fragrance that you like, I happen to love lilacs in nature, but that's another way. If you know which plants don't have essential oils available for use, that will help you know what that product is. This is kind of a safety thing, but should essential oils be used around children and pets at the same dose as adults?
Excellent question. And the quick answer is no, they should not be.
Yeah. And
Should always be aware of how much you're actually, let's say you're using an oil diffuser, you know, how much is in the air. And if you're smelling something strong, that very young child in that that particularly a small pet, but even large pets, are smelling it twice as heavy as you are. Not all essential oils are safe for animal use. There are many oils that are great to use for animals, but there's a definite list on the safety of which ones not to use. And then with the young children, we have to remember that these are really powerful components, chemical components. And a young child's liver is actually still developing. And where does everything in our body end up? It gets filtered through the liver. So I always hesitate when a young mother has a very young baby, young toddler, and she's very excited and wants to begin using essential oils. I unfortunately have to kind of help guide her into, why don't you wait till the child's at least 2 and even closer to 5?
I've told a couple of my nieces, why don't you use the plant,
yes,
actual plant, instead of the essential oil until they get a little older? Because that's, if you put a little pillow sachet in their bedding and the kids rolling around, there's a little bit of aroma, mm-hmm, and there's not any of the danger,
yes,
with the essential oil overload. I don't know, the liver overload or any of that.
That's where a hydrosol comes in too.
Yes.
Such a wonderful play, because it's actually safe for young children.
And pets, I understand.
And pets.
Yes.
Because it doesn't carry the essential oil to that overload you were speaking of. You know, it's,
yes,
just not this minute 0.005 amount, you know, within an ounce of hydrosol.
But with most of the benefit.
With most of the benefits, yes.
Yeah. Excellent.
Not
point.
All, but
no,
most.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
No,
and that's where you know. You start to learn, well,
yes,
why would I use an essential oil of lavender with or instead of a hydrosol of lavender? You know, you kind of start to,
yes,
to learn the little nuances of that. But hydrosols with young children are excellent.
Yes. I hope everyone out there is feeling so positive now, because that other was a big negative. I can see a bunch of people alarmed because they've left here's another thing I want folks to know. Just because a diffuser has a 12-hour setting does not mean that you should have essential oils blasting for 12 hours. They actually, it's counterintuitive, I know, but more is not better. It's actually better to do short spurts with long gaps in between. But anyway.
Absolutely right. I love the more is not better. I use that line quite a lot when people come to me to make purchases. More is not better.
But because that setting is on so many of the equipment out there, it seems like maybe that would be what to do. But no, just because the setting's there, don't use it.
Yeah. And, you know, you've got to take into account what size room you're in. Yeah. Does it have high ceilings or short ceilings? Is it, you know, how much space is there? But little spurts, you said it all, Karen. Little spurts intermittently.
Yes, yes.
More is not better.
Yes. And, you know, olfactory fatigue is a real issue. And you just aren't getting any benefit after a while because your nose is overloaded. can essential oils we just answered this question, so I'm going to move on. Where can a homeowner get an essential oil still to make their own?
Let me think about that for a second. Well, it just so happens I got so interested in stills. And the moment I got my first copper still, I knew I was in love with all of it. So I started importing copper stills. So you can actually find some copper stills on my website at followingseasons.com. And if, you know, you go to the button that says copper stills and you can read a little bit about it. And I sell this time 2 different times, the rotating column and the 5-liter that you have.
Yeah.
And I also sell the Aquitar, which I really like for different purposes. And I talk a little bit about that on my website. And I import them from Portugal. And, of course, I of course, love the opportunity to say, hey, I sell them, come to me. And yeah. it's a wonderful way. Typically, of course, if you're close to me, I'll give you a little lesson on how to set it up and how to use
that's
it.
That's what I'm getting, people. That's what I'm getting. I really quickly before we wrap this up, and we're going to do this again because there's so much.
Oh, I could go on forever. Yeah, Karen, yeah. Do we have to stop already?
But there is a difference between stainless steel and copper. And I'd like you to address that before we wrap this up.
Yeah. And I do, I believe, talk just a little bit about it on my website. Stainless steel is a wonderful steel. Stainless steel is wonderful. But with a stainless steel, you tend to want to have your hydrosols rest, if you will, for maybe even up to a month or so before they're ready to bottle up and use. With the copper, the copper itself kind of comes into play, that metal, and it releases the sulfur. So when you get the note off the still, you don't smell a little bit of sulfur that you might smell with a stainless steel. Therefore, you can start to use your hydrosol from the copper still much sooner. You know, I mean, I use it right away, mm-hmm. and it smells beautiful right away. And one of the nice things about that is the fresher the product, the better. Now, sure, a month or two on the shelf before you start to use it is fine, but why not use it, you know, the very next day and it's ready to use? So the copper itself as an element comes into play.
And that was something that I learned from you because I had been looking at a stainless steel that a friend had gotten and recommended. So I was looking at what she had, and I was obviously just, you know, salivating after the beautiful copper that you had. I mean, it's visually, it's artwork. It's hammered, people. Oh, you go to her website and take a look at it. It's just beautiful. But then when you explained that the metals react differently with the product, I was sold on copper because the whole purpose of this is for me to be able to use my home garden harvest and use it. And I've never been able to do that before. And I want to use it fresh. I don't want to have it be as old as something that I could get off somebody's shelf. That's what I did before. I want it to be different. So this, for me, made all the difference to learn that the metal reacts and plays a part in the product. Yeah. And I want the copper product. Yeah.
And it is just so beautiful.
It is. Yeah. It's artwork. I mean, it's just... Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, this was amazing. I'm so happy that we're doing this and we're going to do it again. I don't know when because this is all so new, but I think it's called Herbs Make the Difference. And I'll explain that title comes from a book that I got early in my journey. And so I'll maybe talk about that at another time. But wherever you're listening to this, whenever you're listening to it, go into the show notes and get website information for the different groups that we've mentioned. And so it'll be the Handcrafted Soapmakers Guild, it'll be Following Seasons Botanicals, it'll be Edge Hill Herb Farm, and maybe some information from the Handcrafted Soapmakers Guild on, I believe that there's some sheets on essential oil safety available.
I think I see that?
Yeah.
At soapguild.org. Yeah. They have it. But you need to be a member to access a lot of that information.
But I will, what is available to the general public, I will link in there for those that want to learn from that. So there you go. Thank you,
excellent.
Cindy.
Karen, it's always so fun. It's such a delight to hang out with you. I just
we are the same age, even though we didn't grow up in the same town. If we had, we would have been in class together.
Yeah, I'm sure of it.
I am too. All right. So until next time, I want everyone to go out and use the herbs you grow. Bye.
Bye-bye.